Good afternoon. My name is Helen, and I am an alcoholic. And I ask you for a moment of silence in gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 75 years. And now the serenity prayer. Grant me the serenity to act things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, we will start with the speakers. And our first speaker is... Excuse me. It's Leroy from Montana.
Thank you. Thank you, Helen. You're a good chair. Respectfully put the text messaging away. My name is Leroy, and I am an alcoholic. I'd like to take this time. I was asked by a brother of our fellowship earlier. He came up, and I could feel the Spirit flowing through, the sunlight of the Spirit. He's asked me to recognize, and I said I would ask for a brief moment of silence, the late Jeanette Timmentois of the Colville tribe. She was sober for a period of 50 years. She sobered up January of 1960. First came into the program in 1949. She was the first Native American woman to get sober in AA. She knew Bill and Bob. Bill worked with her and created a Native American song for drunks. She helped start meetings all over Montana, Idaho, and Washington. What a miracle. Moment of silence. And in her memory, I would like to share my story today. And in honor of the creator of my understanding, I opened up a daily reading that my pastor had given me, a book of daily readings when I first stepped into the public office that I am in now. And I'd like to share this reading with you with respect to all of your higher power of your understanding. July 3rd, put your past behind you. Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before, I press toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. Philippians 3:13-14. Many people need to be delivered from the skeletons of their past. Those things which are behind may include failed marriages, broken promises, failures, disappointments, setbacks, and betrayals. You can be standing waist high in ocean water and watch as water begins to ebb quietly away from you. Then the force of the wave begins to increase, propelling you forward. Just as the tide pulls the water back, forming a wave of power, God draws you to Himself. Don't fight against God's pulling and tugging at your spirit. Allow yourself to be drawn to Him and enveloped in His presence. Trust Him with your very life, and He will propel you forward into your destiny. Aho. I am here representing the Crow Nation in Montana. I also have the bloodlines of the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara nations. And also, my bloodline also originates on the Pine Ridge and the Lower Brule Sioux nations. And I'm honored to be here today with all of you. I'm honored to be here today expressing that my sobriety date is September 19th of 2005. Let me tell you today in humility and humbleness of what this program has taught me. I do not stand here today by my own ability. I do not stand here today by an understanding of a so-called wisdom or knowledge. I only stand here today because of a power greater than me. I only stand here today because it's folks like you that stuck your hand out in unity, that stuck your hand out in fellowship and said, come with me. It is people like you in the fellowship that have come together this week in unity and in friendship that our sobriety exists. That is why I am alive today. And if I could ask today my sponsor who's sitting here in the crowd with me, when I have 5 minutes left, could you raise your hand? 5 minutes. Because I love to tell stories. I'm alcoholic. I like to add on and build up and just tell the truth, but a little bit more. And oftentimes, if I don't get my way, I'll tell you half the truth. Whoa. My way got me into so much difficulty, into so much heartache and turmoil. I was an alcoholic at the moment that I came into this planet. I know that for a fact. I did not know till I started working the steps and asking my sponsor to become my sponsor. I did not know that I was an alcoholic real young. I did not know until I came into these rooms. I thought I was crazy. I thought I was alone. I remember at 5 and 6 years of age, and I remember it well. In my head, there was these voices that said I was no good. In my head, I heard these voices that they said that you'll be nothing. I remember these voices said in my head, whatever you do, whatever you decide to do, you're never going to be anything. Never forget that. I remember it said that in my head. And I remember it said it in my head that your parents never wanted you. I was raised by my grandparents on the Crow Indian Reservation. And I remember that thinking came at 5, 6, 7 years of age. I remember the terror and the horror that would speak to me at that age. And the only thing that could quiet it down was the old records. Remember, what size were they? 70? 45. Remember 8-track tapes. Yeah. I can do a preaching on 8-track tapes right now. Oh, I love it. This is great today. I'm so excited to be here. But I tell you what, I would play the records. And I'd play the records so that thinking would shut down. I found comfort in the records so I could go to sleep at night. And I didn't know I was alcoholic. I did not know. As I grew up in junior high and high school, I remember in my early years, I got into a bunch of trouble. And it's not what we do that got us here. It's our thinking. It's not all the fiascos that we created that got us here. It's our thinking. I remember it well, junior high. I got into all this trouble and blah and bang and got into a little bit of marijuana and inhalants. That stuff don't matter. It happens. You know, we all play the same stories. We all hear each other. And I tell you what, you know, and when law enforcement came, seventh grade, they said, we're going to take you away for a long time if you don't straighten out your act. If you don't. And I remember it well. Seventh grade, I said, I got to change my game. I got to change my game. And we're so good at that as alcoholics. We're so good at that. I'm so good at that. I remember when I got into high school, my freshman year, I go, I got to change my game from hurting, literally going out, hurting others, stealing things, doing this and that, trying to shut down that thing in my head. When I got into high school, to make a long story longer, I changed my game. I said to myself, if I get straight A's, they won't know who I am. If I become the captain of the basketball team and the cross country team, they won't know who I am. When I became a sophomore, they won't know who I am if I become student council president. I can hide behind the title. I didn't know this at the time. I didn't know this at the time. If I hide, they won't know who I am. They won't get to know me. They won't get to know the voice in my head. And I continued on. Could I grab that water? Thank you. They won't know who I am. And I joined every club there was imaginable in high school just to shut this thing down. Now the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about it. Talks about how we had moral, physiological convictions galore. I had all that. I remember at the age of 16 and 17, I had all that. I seen my mother, my natural mother, living on the streets of Skid Row. I seen my father walk out of our lives at a young age. I seen those things because of alcoholism. I remember my first drink, 17 years of age. I was mad at my mom who raised me. I was mad at my parents for whatever reason I don't remember, but I remember my first drink. Sitting on top of the rims in Billings, Montana. And I remember I was so angry. I had a can of Budweiser. I looked at it and I said, I hate you. I don't like you. It was like being in a relationship. I'm not talking to anyone today. But I looked at that Budweiser. I said, you've killed my nations. You've killed my family. I don't like you. You're like this. You're like that. And I swore and I promised I would never touch you. But then I opened up that Bud Light. And I took the first drink. And I took a second drink. I'll show them. It's just my excuse to drink water. And I tell you what, two or three cans into the matter, I was like, whoa, yeah, those people ain't so bad. My mom and dad ain't so bad. This is all right. It's okay. Wow. I found a new friend. Who's been there? I found a new friend. My sponsor calls it, my world changes to technicolor. Whoa. And for the first time in my life, the thing in my head shut down. The thing in my head quieted down. And whoa. For the rest of my time, throughout my teenage years, throughout my 20s, I wanted that feeling back. The elusive, what does the big book call it? The elusive, help me out. Yeah, that. I was after the feeling of that first drink. And I kept chasing it. I kept going after it. And I kept trying to find it. I looked underneath the bottle. I looked over the bottle. I looked to its side. I turned it upside down. I went from bottle to bottle, drink to drink, can to can, relationship to relationship. I would move people out of the way just to get that drink. And I wouldn't stop at anything to get it. And I remember throughout my 20s, I was still trying to shut that thing down in my head. And I was just the relentless pursuit of quieting it down and going back to that first feeling. And I remember it got worse and worse and worse and worse. And I could not find it. I thought I could find it in running for public office. I thought I could find it in material things. I thought I could find it in money. Just like in high school, I thought I could find it in titles. And in 1996, I began running for public office. I remember it well. I ran for public office in 96, in 98. 2001, 2003. I tried to hide behind material things. I tried to hide behind the titles. And I remember when I first got into public office, I would threaten people. I would belittle them. I would pounce on them before they pounce on me. And I would do nothing. I would stop at nothing to get my way. And ultimately, what had happened was this. It took me to a hospital bed in Hardin, Montana, in April of 1995, or 2005. Took me to a hospital bed, and there I lie. And I did not know that my skin was turning yellow. I had nowhere to go. I had no other options. The doc said, "You got to stop drinking, Leroy. You're going to be dead in 2 months. You got to stop drinking." "I got this thing figured out, doc. Look, I got a good job. I got a fancy car. I've got the title. I don't need anybody, doc." He said, "No. You're going to be dead in a couple months if you don't quit." I said, "I don't know what to do, doc." The doctor said, Dr. O said to me, "Who do you want to talk to? Preacher, priest, medicine man, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous?" I said, "Doc, I don't care who you bring. Bring somebody." And I lie there for a day or two detoxing. And I wake up. And as the brother, if any were here yesterday, I got the same story as the brother yesterday. I looked over, and there was a white guy with a cowboy hat. I was just like in my head. Remember Different Strokes, Gary Coleman? "What you talking about, Willis?" That was my thought that came. I was like, "What's this guy doing here?" He introduced himself. He told me a story. I had never listened to anybody before. I didn't want to. But there was something about his story that I could relate to. His mission, his message. I looked over. He says, he remembers me sitting up, putting on my cap and going, "Yeah." We started to relate. Thus the story of Alcoholics Anonymous, when two drunks came together. 75 years later, 2 million members from all over the world, 60,000 in attendance today. Let freedom ring. That meeting in that room was no accident. I had prayed for an answer. I couldn't relate to church at that time. I couldn't relate to a sweat lodge at that time. I didn't sober up right away after I met him. He planted a seed. A few months later, I went to treatment. I come out of treatment, thought I knew everything. 18 months, I white knuckled it. I can do this. I'm the justice of the peace for Bighorn County. I'm a legislator for the Crow Nation. I'm a good Crow man. I can handle this shit. Oh. Please forgive me. 18 months on the brink of suicide. I called up Shane. He's coming from Missoula, listening to Tupac and Notorious B.I.G. music. Started singing about suicide. Boy, this music's pretty good. I said, I'm going nuts. I called up Shane and said the five magic words, will you be my sponsor? We went to our first retreat months or two later. And I'll never forget it. Men's retreat. We walk into the cabin. This kid walks up. You want to do dishes? Obviously, this kid doesn't know who I am. My sponsor turns around after the kid leaves. He said, you do not refuse an AA request. Do you understand me? And then I remembered, are you willing to go to any length? I remembered that statement that I agreed to. Ooh. All right. I went and washed dishes that week. Best thing that ever happened to me. Not too long after that, I got into service work. Not too long after that, I was nuts and crazy like I am today. I remember there came a time where I had no other alternative. I wasn't willing to call my sponsor every day. I wasn't quite willing to get past step four and look at me. I took a gal hostage from Seattle, Washington. I was trying to force her to marry me. She ran for her life. And I tell you what, I came back to Billings, Montana, and I started handing out my card. Hi, my name's Leroy. Invite me to your facility. Invite me to your jail. Hey, invite me to your treatment center. I had no other alternative. I just remember the story, how they helped others. Am I out of time? Five more minutes? Really? All right. Woo! I was really trying to hurry. Yeah. Oh, sorry about that. Man, I love to talk in front of people. This is so awesome. Can I hear you? Yeah! Are you happy to be clean and sober today? If you do, shout! Woo! Liberty, let freedom ring. Woo! The simplicity of being able to sleep at night, ladies and gentlemen. The simplicity of being able to look in the mirror and thank God for what He has created. The simplicity of being able to shake hands with no matter who it is. The simplicity of being able to walk into a grocery store and no longer live in fear. Fear of economic insecurity and people will leave us. I didn't get there by not working the steps. I didn't get there by not being not willing. And I'm not willing by volunteerism, let me tell you. I only volunteer because of pain. Who's been there? Yeah, amen. And I tell you what, I'm glad I got these 4 minutes left. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a new lease on life. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a new beginning. Alcoholics Anonymous, these rooms have given me hope. Today, I remember when I first met my twins. Visitation, my twins just turned 7 a couple weeks back. I remember my twin daughters, they must have been 3. I had 4 hours on a Saturday to visit. Visitation. I would spend an hour driving to Sheridan, Wyoming. I go, man, I got to kill an hour. I'll go to McDonald's Playland, sit there, and I can work on the computer while the girls play. Yeah, you done it too. Sorry, I couldn't resist. For 2 hours, they would play. I got to get my laptop. And I go, well, that 4th hour, I can drive back and drop them off and so I can get back to work. Whoa. Today, there is not enough hours in the day. Today, there's not enough days in the week to spend time with them. I go, man, we had them for 4 days on their birthday weekend. We went and rented a suite at the, what is it called? Some fancy hotel back in Billings, Montana, with water slides and birthday cake and ripped a turtle. Even though I kind of got a resentment from ripped it. Okay. Good chair. I'll close with this. Ripped the turtle. I almost got a resentment. I had to get to a meeting. And that's why I'm here, ladies and gentlemen, to celebrate a new life. That's why I'm here, because I'm thankful to be clean and sober today. Aho Gajila. Thank you.
Thank you, Leroy. That was real strong. I thought the podium was going to fall off the table. Well, anyway, the next speaker is Sherry L. from Oklahoma.
Okay, I'm Sherry L. and I'm an alcoholic. Hello, San Antonio. It is truly by the grace of God and the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm sober today. And my sobriety date's July 1st, 1986. I'm Cherokee Indian. Pretty much if you're born in Oklahoma, There's blondes on the roll. I come from northeastern Oklahoma, the Irish and the Italians love, you know, they love this, but, you know, I think it's pertinent to me, what I call the CIA, which is Catholic, Indian, and alcoholic. My home was violent. My home was religious. My home was alcoholic. And it was home. I'm known as the willful child. I don't know why I'm known as the willful child. It may have something to do with, I'll give you an example. I grew up for the first 8 years in Nowata, Oklahoma. And I want you to know there's 3 past delegates from Nowata, Oklahoma, so that ought to tell you something about Nowata, Oklahoma. Nowata, Oklahoma, great place to be from. And I'm less than 8 years old, and I tell my middle sister that I have leukemia and that I'm dying and that she can't, mother does not want to discuss this because it makes her sad. And she needs to do everything I want her to do. I'm less than 8 years old. Selfishness and self-centeredness has been with me from the very get-go. I don't know whether I was alcoholic when I was born, but I'm telling you, I obviously was selfish and self-centered. And that is, I was waiting for a drink. I was absolutely waiting for a drink. You can't exist like I do when you're assigning blame to the world. And you're not taking responsibility for anything. And someone like me needs a drink. And it was not my first drink. I come from an alcoholic home. It's never our first drink. But it was my first drunk, and it was when I was 14 years old, and it goes something like this. I gulped drinks. Oh, we were drinking sloe gin and strawberry pop. By all that's holy, I don't think I've had that mixture since. I gulp drinks. I get very knowledgeable. I get argumentative. I get mean in there. I was with a bunch of girls. I didn't get promiscuous then. I vomit and I either black out or pass out. I did not know what blackouts were until I had this boyfriend later on down the line that kept on telling me what I did in the blackouts. And so that's when I figured out I was having blackouts, but I didn't figure it out then. And that's as good as my drinking gets. Everybody knows from northeastern Oklahoma, if you've got Indian blood, you can't hold alcohol. It's a fact. We lack an enzyme or something. That's what I used to tell them. That's the reason why I got so drunk and so mean and so, what did happen for me was reaching out and touching Jesus part. You know, I had a spiritual awakening. I had a spiritual experience, and it was with alcohol. When our previous speaker talks about the love affair with alcohol, I understand it well. I gave up everything for it. Absolutely everything. I gave up the rich boyfriend. I gave up my children. I finally lost a job. I was losing the poor boyfriend. Some things. But that's where alcohol took me. And I remember, all my boyfriend wanted me to do was, he just wanted me to not drink so much beer. And he was a medical doctor, and he thought that beer was my problem, and that if I drank good scotch and mixed it with soda or something like that, that I wouldn't have those personality changes. I drank Chivas Regal and water for 2 years holding my nose. And I got just as drunk and just as mean and just as everything. You know, and finally where my drinking took me to where it was absolutely the thing that I had to do to for the plain leveling field. That's what I had to do. I didn't have the tools. Not that I did not have good teachers, but I didn't have the tools to be a mom. I didn't have the tools to be a mother. I didn't have any living tools because I chose alcohol time and time and time again. When choice came to shove, I always chose alcohol. I chose alcohol until finally there was nowhere else to go, you guys. It was absolutely, that was it. I'm way too Catholic to kill myself. And I absolutely know without a shadow of a doubt that I'm going to go on this way. I just don't know how long I'm going to go on. That's the problem. If I knew how long I was going to go on, I could have done some things. But I didn't understand. And to me, living in that twilight zone was absolutely the worst thing. I wasn't living, and I wasn't dead, and I was in that altar world, and I didn't know what to do. Finally, and I'll tell you about the last 24 hours of my drinking. I went in, they evaluated me. These people that evaluated me told me that I was in the latter stages of alcoholism. I look at the woman and I said, I'm a 3.2 beer drinker. I'm a woman. I understand the Indian part, you know. We like the enzyme. I understand that. But I'm a woman. I drink 3.2 beer. Everybody knows that you can't be alcoholic and drink 3.2 beer. Everybody knows that. She said, you're in the latter stages of alcoholism. She gave me the choice of going to a couple of treatment centers, and one was back east in Minnesota because I was also on various outside issues that they felt like it was going to be a problem to come off all this stuff, and that I needed to be in a medical facility where I could do this. And so I got the choice of Minnesota or Tucson, Arizona. You heard my sobriety date, didn't you? I looked at those people, and I said, lady, I'm from northeastern Oklahoma. I'm a woman. We do not wear pajamas around Yankees. I am not going to Minnesota. I'll go to Arizona. And this stuff, you guys, about dry and wet heat, no. No, 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 no. When it's 120 in the shade in Arizona, it's 120 in the shade. You know, and I am so ever grateful to that place for giving me physical sobriety. But you guys were the place. I didn't know it. I thought you were Moonies. I didn't want to do you all. But I had no choice. You were the last house on the block. You were the last house on the block for someone like me. And so I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a sponsor. I started working the steps. I started realizing, and I realized pretty quick, how important the traditions were going to be in my life. I understood that. I got that. That the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous was going to have to come first. If someone like me was going to make it, the unity was going to have to come first, and I needed to be with a group that unified and that stayed within the traditions. I became the first American Indian woman, I was the third delegate out of Oklahoma and the first Native American woman out of Oklahoma. Thank you. I'm panel 51, area 57, which is Oklahoma, and I'm very proud of Oklahoma. But what I understand one more time, and where I have a problem, you guys, with specialty groups. You can have all, I understand that in Alcoholics Anonymous we can have all the specialty groups we want to. You can be Indian and gay. You can be, you can have any of these, you can have any group that you want and call it Alcoholics Anonymous if two or three are gathered together for sobriety and have no other purpose. They may call themselves an AA group. If they have another purpose, they should never be called an Alcoholics Anonymous group. I live in Seminole, Oklahoma now, and that's the heart of Seminole Nation in Oklahoma. And the Seminole community, and I'm just picking on them right now. They want to incorporate Alcoholics Anonymous, Medicine Wheels, Sweat Lodges, and a bunch of other things, and they want to put it in as Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, if they want to do all that and call this recovery whatever, they're more than welcome to, but they cannot call, they cannot add religious ceremonies to Alcoholics Anonymous and call it Alcoholics Anonymous. It has got to stay Alcoholics Anonymous or people like me won't make it. I'll unique myself out of this thing. I will absolutely do it. I'm going to tell you a story. My son-in-law, the cop, I'm colorful. My son-in-law, the cop, had a really good friend that was a vet. And, I mean, a veterinary medicine. And he went to a treatment center in, I think, down south. And they told this guy to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And this man was some sort of IV drug user. And they told him to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And he went to a specialty group in Alcoholics Anonymous that excluded anybody but their specialty group. And he didn't relate. And they didn't say anything to him. This young man OD'd and died. And I remember telling my son-in-law, I know of one group calling themselves Alcoholics Anonymous that has a piece in this, that has a big piece in this. Alcoholics Anonymous has got to be Alcoholics Anonymous. My home group is the ABC group of Seminole, Oklahoma. Homies? It, no matter what your race is, your creed is, no matter what your sexual preference is, you are welcome in our meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous if you have a desire to stop drinking. If you all are ever in Seminole, Oklahoma on Monday and Friday nights, 7 o'clock, we meet at the First Baptist Church. When have you heard of that one? We meet at the First Baptist Church in Seminole, Oklahoma, and we will take all takers. Because Alcoholics Anonymous has got to be a safe place for anybody that wants to do something about their drinking. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sherry. And the next speaker is Kaipo. Kaipo from Hawaii.
an alcoholic and a drug addict in recovery. My name is Kaipo. My home group is Kanye Discussion in Honolulu, Hawaii. First of all, I want to thank the speakers. And I was just talking to Sherry. I just said, you know, I'm kind of emotional kind of guy. And, you know, she said, it's good. Then, you know, I may cry for like maybe 15 minutes and just going to share for 5 minutes. But, you know. This still show pass, yeah, right now. What I can tell you is that it's going to give you the breakdown of my race. I'm Hawaiian, I'm Chinese, I'm Puerto Rican, and Portuguese. Yeah? And, you know, my grandpa was 100% Hawaiian, but, you know, nowadays they crossbreed, they meet this Chinese or Portuguese lady, and they crossbreed, and they meet this kind of guys, yeah, like me. But you know, if you guys ever been to Hawaii, it's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful island. And you want to get sober, the love is mean. What I can tell you is that I suffer from this disease called alcoholism. And, you know, through the steps, I could realize that, you know, when I was drinking out there, I just told myself that I ain't an alcoholic, yeah? But, you know, the things that alcohol did, yeah? You know, when I drank, I became this person, yeah? That no one want to be around me, and anyone in my sight is going to get hurt, yeah? And, you know, I'm so grateful that I suffer from this disease, and, you know, that I have this common solution that's called Alcoholics Anonymous, yeah? And thank you very much. And, you know, what I can tell you is that my dad was an alcoholic, but I cannot label him. He drank a lot, but I cannot tell you that he was an alcoholic, yeah? But when he drank, he became this belligerent one. You know, he came home and he just physical and abused my mom, and verbally, yeah. And what I learned from a very young age that I resented my dad, you know, my mom, she expressed a lot of love, yeah. And, you know, was always like that person that I was growing up was always that resentment in my head, like at a very young age, at 8 years old, always telling myself, when I come older, I will hurt this man, yeah? So this disease is mean. It became, I escalated into this disease and, you know, drinking and doing whatever I had to do to get this drink. And, you know, there's other things called mind-altering substances got involved too. And, you know, was always that thing, yeah? Was like, oh, when I get older, my daddy's going to get hurt, yeah? So just growing up to being a teenager and whatnot, and, you know, just growing up was like this thing called like supervision through my parents. And, you know, my dad, he drank, but he always, this Fridays, he would just tell me, you know, son, let's go shopping. But, you know, my dad wasn't an affectionate person. You know, I always told my dad, I love you, but, you know, he always used to look at me and say, he just nod his head and just, that was the kind of person he was, yeah. And, you know, my dad is 100% Portuguese. And I can tell you about this man, you know, even though he's wrong, he's right, yeah. But how you kill him Portuguese is just don't talk to him, yeah. And that's one thing, yeah. And, you know, if you do that, they get very, 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 very resentful after that. But, you know, by just growing up, you know, my parents gave me this good education. You know, I went to this Catholic school for 7 years and whatnot. You know, I learned how to read, I learned how to write, you know, and you know, you're just wearing this this goofy kind of outfit that you go to this Catholic school. And, you know, what I learned is that, you know, my parents, just that was their direction, yeah? You know, study hard and be a good kid. But, you know, what got involved was this thing called this disease, yeah, of alcoholism and addiction, yeah? And that's the thing, yeah? And you know, just growing up was always to be a part of this kids out of this neighborhood in the housing, yeah? And that's what made me feel a part of, yeah? These kids always making trouble and whatnot. And you know, that's what made me feel a part of. And you know, growing up, it was very simple, yeah? Just go to school. You know, my mom was 100, she worked full-time babysitting. And you know, what I learned is that, you know, she did the best that she could, yeah? You know, I don't blame my mom and dad to be what I am today. Like, I suffered from that disease. You know, it wasn't my dad that came home and beating up my mom and whatnot that I'm going to be that I'm going to drink. You know, I made that choice. I made that simple choice. But I'm very grateful that I did that choice because I wouldn't be here, yeah? And, you know, but you see, I always talk about this. My God had a plan for me, yeah? Even though I was on that jumping off place, wherever I was on this island and whatnot, ready to suicide and whatnot, my God didn't let me attempt it. And that's the magic. So I continued to do whatever I needed to do, yeah? Getting in trouble, getting incarcerated, and, you know, just hurting my parents and whatnot. And, you know, one thing that I did was, you know, my parents always was this. They said, you know, even though my dad drank a lot, he came home and he always used to say, you know, son, you know, when you grow up, make something of yourself. Yeah, that was that one thing that he told me, yeah? But I looked at him with that resentment from 8 years old. Now I'm a teenager. Like, I told him, like, he's full of, you know, the word, yeah? And, you know, and what happened was, you know, I continued to hold that resentment to growing up, yeah? And, you know, nowadays, you know how to hold on, you know, us people today in these rooms, if you hold on resentment for a long time, you know what's going to happen, yeah? And, you know, what happens, I just hold that resentment from 8 years old to teenager to when I was an adult. And, you know, I can tell you what happened was, like, you don't want to just, you know, that disease just made me do what I needed to do at that time, yeah? And that disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And it doesn't care who you are, yeah? The ones that love you, you're going to hurt them no matter what, yeah? You know, that day that I came home, and I just wasn't in the mood to be bothered, yeah? That hangover, you know, and this man, which is my dad, he just looked at me and said, he just like knick-knacked. You know, Brother Leroy talk about that thing, yeah? You know, that you are a loser. You know, my dad pointing his thing at me. I wish you wasn't born, you know. You're a disgrace to this family and all that kind of stuff, yeah? You know, already I was suffering from this disease already, yeah? And, you know, I was like a turmoil to my parents and whatnot. And, you know, my dad just looked at me and he just was like getting down. And I just looked at this man and he's just giving me this crap and whatnot. And, you know, I just looked at him, and this is the time. 22 years old, I was ready. And, you know, I looked at this man, and I said, you're going to deserve it. All that times when I was a young kid, that's a big resentment. That's bigger than one dumpster, when rolling dumpster. I looked at this man, and I started to abuse my dad. You know, I physical abused my dad. And, you know, when I physical abused my dad, and I looked at him on the ground, and I looked at him, and I... You know, that disease is so mean, and he said, and the disease just made me feel like this. You know, Dad, you deserve that. You deserve that. And he looked at me with tears in his eyes. And I just the thing that he looked at me with that black eyes on his face, and I just said, you deserve that. And, you know, I walked away and did what I needed to do. And, you know, I continued to do that. And, you know, until I got to that point was the end of the road, yeah? You know, always was like stealing from my parents and all that. You know, stealing the bank card, yeah? Just to get to that disease that I needed, yeah? And, you know... What happened was, you know, was that last thing, yeah? And I'm so grateful that, you know, see, my God has a plan for what happened, whatever I did in the disease to end up where I'm at today, yeah? And what happened was I just stole my dad's bank card, and I just went like, you know, and always when I took my dad's bank card, when I took out money, I always looked at him when he was sleeping. I deserve this and you owe me, yeah? I was always a self-centered and selfish person I was, yeah? And, you know, that last one, you know, I got busted, yeah? And, you know, at that time I was like worrying about what I'm going to do and all that. And, you know, what happened was I got busted, yeah? You know, I got escorted. I got subpoenaed to the police station, and you know what happened was they laid out this thing called what happened. I took the bank card, and you know this, and they just told me, you know, we have two choices for you, yeah. And you know, I just said, what is the two choices? Sitting in a chair, and I just said, what is these two choices? And they just said, you know, you get to get on jury trial, or you can get into this state program, yeah. And, you know, I just told them, what is the state program? In my head, I was like, I want the easier, softer way, yeah? Because already, yeah, already they're laying out the evidence. And I'm looking at the evidence. I can see my face. See, I was a pretty stupid guy at that time, yeah? Because when you make transactions off a bank machine, you know, the camera is smooth, you know, the camera. You know, when she split everything. She thinks this whole room can be involved in that camera. And like I just was like, I'm not going to get away with this. What is the state program? How can I get in? No, I'm like scratching. I wasn't ready to surrender yet, you know. It was like a lot more reservations ready. And, you know, and they just said, we report to this place in town and you can see this lady and this man and they're going to see if I get accepted in this program. And, you know, eventually I went down and I got accepted in this program in 96, yeah. And, you know, what happened was, you know, I did the deal for a little while, yeah. You know, it was like this. He told me it's an 18-month program. And if you succeeded, this charge get expunged, yeah. And what happened was I just did it for that 1 year. Eventually from 96 to 97, I kept relapsing and whatnot. You know, I had to take random UAs. I had to just check in with this counselor and this lady. And, you know, it was like that. You know, calling up the phone. Yeah, checking if that was my color and my number. Yeah? You know, if wasn't my color and my number for that weekend, you know, we're going to party. Yeah? And, you know, that was the thing already. Yeah? And, you know, it was always like that. Then you're going down to this store where they sell this solution, yeah, to clean your urine. Yeah? And, you know, then after that, this man come up to me, okay? He doing the same thing what I do, relapsing too, yeah? He tell me, oh, go take Clorox. Clorox, drink them straight, the thing clean. And, you know, but I can tell you, I never did that because I do not like the smell and whatnot. But he said, if you drink Clorox, it cleans out your system. But, so I went down to this Vin, it's called Vin and Bigger. It's a place where you can get the solution, you know. You know, already I'm telling you guys, wasted motions already. It was a lot of work, you know, doing that. You know, relapsing is hard work, you know. But, and you know what I can tell you is that what happened was I tried to fake it, yeah. You know, I get away a couple times, okay. You play the fake, then they tell you, okay, you have a dirty urine. Then you come up to them because you just so dishonest and whatnot, not ready to look at self yet. And you just tell them, you know, you better go check that urine again because, I never. But, you know, eventually I kept relapsing. 96 to 97, just 1 year, I just kept relapsing. You know, it took 7 relapses until I realized that, you know, I was at this person's house and I was like down and out, you know. Eventually when I was like relapsing in this 1 year, you know, something was happening, yeah? When I was dropping off my paper, I sit down a little while, and these gentlemen and these women used to say this, keep coming back, you know, don't leave until the miracle, yeah? You know, don't leave, keep, stick around, yeah? All the kind of simple things that this, you know, that smile that said, you're welcome, let us love you until we can love you, until you can love yourself, yeah? And, you know, eventually, you know, was that last relapse, yeah? Already I'm coming in and out of incarceration, and, you know, already, I was like, down and out, there is a God. He's telling me, give up already, surrender, enough already. And you know, what happened was I just picked up the phone, yeah? I'm absconded from this this program. They don't want no part of me already. They have a warrant out on my arrest and whatnot. And, you know, I just picked up the phone. You know, the first person I called was my mom. You know, my mom told me, "What do you want?" I told her, "You know, Mom, you can do me a favor." Yeah? I just told her, "Can you take me down to this treatment center? And I call you back." I hang up the phone. Then what happened was, the next person I called was this counselor. Yeah, I called him up. He said, "Hey, Kai, how you doing?" I said, "I'd like to turn myself in." He said, "Come down. We'll be waiting for you." And, you know, what happened was my mom picked me up. We went down to this treatment center. And, you know, something happened. Something happened, you know. Something really happened. I don't know what happened yet, but, you know, I'm going to tell you, yeah. But eventually, I went on this journey. I don't know what I was getting myself into. You know, some part of me still had the horns, yeah, telling me, "What are you doing? You get a lot of more to drink and use, yeah? That always get that committee telling you that, yeah? But, you know, that God telling you, don't listen to that guy. Just keep going on the right journey." And, you know, eventually I went down to this state program. I turned myself in. You know, I got incarcerated again. And, you know, eventually I stayed in there for a couple months more. And, you know, I faced the judge again at the state program. And, you know, it is a miracle. You know, I have a beautiful God, yeah? You know, if I never have a beautiful God, I would be left back. I wouldn't even be here, yeah? And, you know, eventually something happened, yeah? And, you know, what God told me was this. I came out. I went to treatment. Graduated from treatment. I experienced this fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got involved with these members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, what I can tell you is that I started to listen. I started to do what these long-timers told me, yeah? Listen and enjoy. I got involved with sponsorship, yeah? Let's do the steps, yeah? The steps is a miracle. Yeah, it showed me to love my dad today, yeah? Yeah? You know, that's a miracle, yeah? And, you know, I want to just thank my wife. Yeah, I'm out of time. You know, usually you can like Brother Leroy, we can share like for an hour, 45 minutes, but today is just 20 minutes. And I want to thank my beautiful wife, Elizabeth. And I want to thank all of you guys for you guys' love and service that you guys put in. And, you know, I just want to thank everybody. Aloha.
Thank you, Kobo. And I want to thank all the panel that spoke. And they had good things to share. And again, my name is Helen. And I am an alcoholic. And I'm just so happy that whoever the committee for this convention called me and asked me to be to chair the meetings here, and this is an honor. I never thought I'd be standing up here in front of you people, and it's emotional that I could do this for you. I've been sober for 17 years. My sobriety date is on February 4th. No, that's my wedding. It's February 7th, 1993. And I've been to, ever since I sobered up, I've been to the other conventions, international conventions in San Diego, Minneapolis, Toronto, and now here. And I've enjoyed all this, and I'm glad that I had a power, higher power, who helped me sober up. I was drinking, both I and my husband were drinking together, but he died in an accident, so in 91. And after that, I went back out for another year. So that's when I sobered up. But I went to two treatments. And the last treatment I went, I was in there and I asked, I think that's what scared me. I asked, they talked about this thing called rubber room. And a few days later, they showed me, because I won't talk at the treatment center. I was so mad. But before that, I was near death. So when I started talking, when they told me that they were going to put me in the rubber room, and I wondered what that was. And when I started talking, then they told me that, they'll show me where it was. So they took me over there. And I thought, I don't want to be in here. It smelled like rubber, but I guess there was nothing but rubber walls. And even the door had rubber on it and just a small thing to peek in. So that scared me. So I think that was part of my sobriety. I have, I live in Zia Pueblo, which is about 35 miles northwest of Albuquerque. It's a small pueblo. And I don't think they even know that I'm representing them here. But the AA group that we have at home, I told them, but nobody seemed to get excited but one person. But the one person that's around here, I just met up with her. She was the only one that was excited, so I'm glad for that. But it's a great pleasure to be here and honor. And like I said, I never thought I'd be here. And it's nice to know a lot of you people and a lot that are still out there. And you're never alone when you're in a convention like this. The people hand out their hands and greet you, and it's really nice. So with that, we'll close the meeting. And again, I want to thank the speakers.